hand slide back down to his cock. It's impossible to resist it because the darn thing is just gorgeous. Long, thick, with a heavy, deep blue crown, he feels more velvety here than anywhere else. His balls are an impressive size, his sack tight against his groin. Blue balls. I giggle. Never has the phrase been more true. He frowns and bats my exploring hands away. I wasn't laughing at you, I explain, biting my lip. Just at a saying we have among humans about blue balls.
What is the saying?
His breath rasps in his throat as I bend down and take him in my hand again, then begin to nibble up and down his shaft. It's not important. I drag my tongue down one thick vein and then back up over the bumpy ridges. How does that feel? When he doesn't answer, I look up from my ministrations. His glowing blue eyes pin me with an intense gaze.
Why are you stopping?
I giggle. Because I asked you a question?
It feels like nothing I have experienced before.
His voice is husky with need, and even as he says the words, more pre-cum beads on his cock. Good enough answer. I return to licking and nibbling on his length, figuring out which touches he likes. I seem to get the most reaction when I drag my teeth along his tender skin, or when I squeeze hard at the base of his cock. So, naturally, I do both quite a bit, until he's thrusting into my hand and there's sweat on his brow. His gaze hasn't moved from me and my ministrations, though. If another alien ship landed outside, I doubt he'd look away. He's utterly fascinated with my mouth. I continue my exploration of his body with a few licks across the top of his shaft, the hard ridged portion, and then move on to the thumb-like protrusion above it. What do you call this again?
It is a spur.
Is it like a clit? Does it feel good if I touch it? I drag my fingers over it experimentally. It feels different than his cock. Where his penis feels like velvet over hard muscle, his spur feels strange. A bit like bone, but covered with skin and flesh. It doesn't deflate or grow any bigger when his cock does, and when I trace my fingers over it, Rahash doesn't seem to react like he does when I lick his cock. He shrugs.
Everything you do feels good.
But this doesn't feel like... like lightning strikes when I lick it? I lean down and give it an experimental lick, watching his face. His cock bobs in response.
It feels good,
he murmurs. But I want him going crazy. So I move to his cock, squeeze the head in my fist, and then lick the slit. And that? Before I can even finish my sentence, he's bucking into my hand, panting. His eyes close and he falls back into the furs, groaning. Yeah, that feels better. Okay, good to know. I return to my licking and sucking of his cock because it never hurts to stick with what a girl knows. I'm actually kind of glad that his spur isn't a major pleasure point because I know how to work a cock. I don't know much of what to do with that. I suck on him for a moment more, and then an idea hits me. I lean down and tongue the base of his spur while working his cock with my hand. His entire body jolts. Rahash gives a shout, and then my hand is covered in hot, sticky cum as he crusts once more. I continue rubbing my tongue along the underside of his spur, and he continues to come, his hips shuddering. I can tell he's doing his best not to move so he doesn't stab me with the thing, but I'm pleased that I made him come so hard. I lift my head and admire the cum shining on my fingers. Guess you're sensitive there after all. He stares at me for a long moment and then grabs my hand.
I shouldn't have.
No, I interrupt before he can get all moody on me. You wanted to come in my mouth? Rahash's nostrils flare again, the only sign of his acknowledgement of my words. Oh, he's shy. I give him a blissful smile and then yawn. I'm going to grab some of the water and clean us up, and then we can go back to bed, okay? The purring in his chest and mine has gone to a low rumble. His cootie is sated for now. Mine too. I'm surprised when he gets up, though, and caresses my cheek.
Wait here.
I do, and he returns a moment later with a small soft pelt in the water skin. He takes my hand in his, and with the water and the fur, cleans me free of his cum. It's a thoughtful gesture, and I can't help but watch with appreciation when he cleans himself off, too. Even if I don't like the man a lot of the time, he's sure pretty to look at. He puts the waterskin back in its place on the shelf and then returns to the bed. His cock is half-mast now. I don't know why I keep looking, but I do. And there's a softer expression on his hard face. He touches my cheek again.
Sleep now. We have an early day tomorrow.
I blink and suddenly realize how tired I am. I guess the post-endorphin glow is wearing off quickly. My cootie hums a song to his as I nod and lie back down in the furs. As soon as I lie down, he is at my side and pulls me against him. My body nestles against his and he's warm, his arms hugging me to his body. He nuzzles my neck and his hand cups my breast. I worry that he's going to think too much of our fooling around. This doesn't change anything, you know, I tell him. I still haven't accepted you as my mate.
More of your denials, he says in a smug voice. Say what you want. I will play along with this courting ritual.
Rahosh. Has any Sakhui hunter ever slept as well as I did last night? I wake up with my cock hard pressed against the soft, tailless bottom of my sleepy human mate, and know a contentment like none I've ever felt before. Liz mumbles something and burrows further under the blankets, so I run a hand along her shoulder and back, admiring her soft human body. The things she did with her mouth last night. My own mouth goes dry in remembrance. Surely those sorts of things are not done between mates? Maybe humans are more inventive. Whatever it is, I am glad for it, and for her. We must be reaching the end of the strange human courtship, and my cock aches to be sheathed deep inside her. Even now my qui begins to resonate at the very thought of her and her answer singing in her chest. I let her sleep for a few minutes more and relieve myself outside of the cave, then return to stoke the coals of the fire. We will be out hunting for most of the day, but I want the fire pit to be warm for when we return so I can make her a tasty broth out of bones. She's still pale and thin, my fragile human mate, and even with eating good raw meat and a strong qui inside her, she's still more delicate than I would like. I'll feed her like a sickly kitten. Many hearty meals and lots of marrow-filled broths to make her cheeks flush with color. Even if that color is a strange pink. I put on my breechcloth and my boots and shrug on my tunic. She will need to dress warmly if we will be out all day, and I will have to watch her closely. Liz is not the type that will admit if she cannot keep up. She will protest and snarl and demand, even if she is staggering with weakness. I admire the strength of her will, but out in the wild it is better to be safe. A cautious hunter is a successful one. I kneel beside her sleeping form and pull the covers up. Her pale human body is all soft curves, the gentle swells of her ass calling for my touch. I admire her rounded thighs and the curve of one half-hidden breast and imagine what delights she will show me tonight. Perhaps she will welcome me into her cunt, protesting the entire time as part of her bizarre human rituals. And I will be home. I nudge her when she doesn't awaken. Come, my mate. The hour grows late and we need to start the day. She groans and rolls over in the blankets, offering me a tantalizing glimpse of her breasts and the thatch of soft fur between her legs. Not your mate, she yawns. Last night was just for funsies. Then she grabs the furs and pulls them back over her. I scowl. Not this again. It doesn't matter if she took me into her body or not. Our queens have decided. She took me in her mouth and made me erupt. Of course we are mated. Irritated, I rip the blankets off and toss them aside. If you are not my mate, then I do not need to be soft on you, do I? Get up, or you will be welcoming a fistful of snow as I would any other lazy hunter. Her eyes open and she scowls at me. Seriously? Who peed in your cornflakes? You're in a foul mood, and you're being slow. Do you wish to hunt, or shall I go without you? I'm coming, she gripes, sitting up. Dick, the song of my people, I reply back to her, remembering her words. You got it. Once Liz gets moving and out of bed, she picks up speed, and I no longer have to wait on her. We bank the fire and leave the cave behind, and I begin to show her how a Sakhui hunter moves in the wild. If it was just me, I would tie a few branches to my tail and whisk them through the snow as I walk to cover my tracks. But because I am traveling with Liz, I want the tracks to remain in case we get separated. I want her to be able to find her way back to the cave. Also, She has no tail. We move through the snow and Liz suggests something called snowshoes. She is smaller than I am and the larger snowdrifts go as high as her waist. At her suggestion, we head to the trees and get a few slim stalks so my mate can play around with her shoe concept when we return to the cave. She's happy to be out and about. Her cheeks are ruddy, but her eyes are glowing bright and there's a smile on her face. She's proud when she demonstrates her bow, too. I sit on my haunches and watch her practice a few shots. It's a strange weapon, a bit like a sling that fires darts instead of stones. She pulls on the string to launch her darts and mutters unhappily when it falls a few feet away. She makes some adjustments to the bow itself and adjusts the tiny feathers in the fletching and then tries again, and this time she's able to hit a tree with some speed a short distance away. I'm impressed. It's an interesting weapon. You are quite clever. She beams at me. I used to hunt with a bow all the time as a teenager. This isn't quite the same, and I'm having to adjust as I go, but it's close. I think I can get it to work. Liz pats her waist. Now I need to make an arrow pouch to go here. I nod. I can help you with that when we get back. She bites her lip, happiness on her face, and my Kui begins to sing. She's beautiful, even with her flat, strange human features. Her Kui responds to mine, and her smile falters a little. Ah, yes. More of the strange human rituals. Denying a mating. I ignore it and gesture at the twin suns, now high in the skies. Are you ready to hunt, then? We can head to the water. Water? She brightens. Is it another heated stream? I could use a bath. She lifts her tunic and wrinkles her nose. I'm a little sweaty. Her scent is like perfume to me, but I shrug. We can bathe or we can hunt. Let's hunt. Maybe we can bathe later tonight? Her expression is innocent. If we catch something, I might even let you wash my back. I will find her the slowest, most sluggish creature in all the snows so she may fill it with her darts.
Liz. Hunting with Rahash is kind of fun. The air is crisp, and even though the snow is heavy, the twin suns are shining and it feels good to get out and explore. I've been cooped up too long in that cave. Rahash isn't the most patient of men, but I can hold my own. My bow is a work in progress, but I'm confident I can get it to work after a few test shots.
There,
Rahash says as we crest a craggy hill. He pulls a strand of hair from his head and releases it, checking if we're upwind or not. He grunts and then gestures over the horizon.
Do you see the tracks?
I squint. How the hell can you see anything from this far away? He grabs my chin and tips it down.
You're not looking at the snow.
I pull away from him and peer down over the ridge. Sure enough, there are tracks in the snow. They head off over the next crest. So we're heading in the right direction?
We are.
He agrees.
You can look at the snow, or you can follow your nose.
My nose?
The smell of the water that comes heated from the earth.
I sniff, and he's right. There's a faint whiff of rotten eggs in the air, which means there's water nearby. Gotcha. He arches one heavy brow at me, which is impressive because his forehead is damn near unmovable with all that plating.
What kind of hunting did your father show you?
If that's a crack aimed at my dead father, I will kick your ass. He reaches for my chin again and tips my head down toward him before I swat his hand away. His hard mouth is curled at the edges in amusement.
So defensive. I meant nothing by it. Your weapons are different. I assumed you had different hunting methods.
Oh. I relax a little. Well, my daddy owned some land out in the sticks. He had a deer blind, and we'd set up near the trails. I sketch out to him with words what a deer blind is, and he nods understanding. And then, of course, there's the deer corn or the salt lick.
Deer corn.
Yeah, you kind of feed them in the same spot every day and stuff. Then, when they're nice and fat and used to handouts, they come to you instead of chasing them down. He grunts acknowledgement and then shields a hand over his eyes, gazing down at the snow.
We have kits that do that to a few Tufangs back at the home caves, but we call those creatures pets.
Hey, I say defensively, thwapping him on the arm. Not every family can afford a freezer full of fresh meat, you know. You do what you have to in order to survive, Mr. Judgy. Of course, I remember saying the same thing to my father back when I was younger. Pot, kettle, and all that. If it puts food on the table, it's hunting.
Wise words, he says. But now you must learn to track.
He's right, of course. Lead on, O wise one. We cross over the hills, and I slog through the snow following him. About 50 yards away, I see the bubbling pool of water, bright blue against the snow. Which is great, except that there's a cliff about 5 feet ahead of us, and it's a sheer drop for at least 20 or 30 feet. Drinking at the water is a shaggy, pony-like creature that looks like a cross between Bambi and a sheepdog.
Divisti,
Rahash says. Okey-doke. Looks like good eating. I pull up my bow and knock an arrow, then aim. The wind is against me, and we're pretty far away. I'm still not used to the pull on the bow, and my needle-like bone arrows are iffy at best. I don't think I can hit him from here. How do we get down there?
Wait here, he tells me, straightening. I'll find a path down.
Rahash saunters away, spear in hand, and I might ogle his ass a bit. Just a bit. I relax my arrow and glance down at the creature, watching it to see if it leaves. I'm so intent on watching it that I almost miss the chirrup I hear from behind me. But then it happens again. I glance over my shoulder. There's a friggin' Ewok. Oh my god. Okay, so it's not really an Ewok. It's a fuzzy thing that looks more like an overgrown Furby with long arms and legs, but the round eyes blinking at me are adorable. It chirrups again and then dashes forward a step or two, then moves back. It blinks at me, then repeats the motion and runs in a circle. Is this a game? For all of its hair and beaky face, it looks young. Maybe it's the big liquid eyes. When it chirrups at me again, the hairs on the back of my neck prickle. This might be bad. Like finding a happy roly-poly bear cub bad, only to realize that mommy bear is a few feet away.
Rahash, you still here?
It cocks its head and scampers away, and I slowly replace my arrow back into firing position. The chirrup sounds again, and then is repeated by another deeper creature's voice, and another. As I gaze out at the snowy ridges behind me, they seem to emerge from everywhere. More of the tall, furry creatures with dirty, matted hair and bulging eyes. I was right. This one's a baby. The others don't look nearly as friendly. Rahash! I call again, raising my arrow as one of the biggest ones moves toward me. Help!
Liz,
Rahash says in a low voice off to my side. I look over at him, heart pounding, and see he's several feet away, spear at the ready. He's in a stare down with three big, nasty versions of the things. He doesn't look over at me, and his stance is one of battle. He's ready to attack the moment anyone moves a muscle. What are these? I hiss. One takes another step forward, and I step backward, only to remember that I'm on the edge of a cliff. Shit, shit, shit.
They are Metlaks, and where there is one, there is 100.
Well, I see 100, I say, exaggerating a bit. Just a bit. There's probably only 24 or so. Gee, that's all.
My mate,
Rahash says in a low voice.
When I say run, you must run. Do not argue.
What is he talking about? Is he going to distract them so I can run away? What? No, I...
Liz,
he says again warningly. I look over and his hand clenches on his spear.
Do not argue with me. Now, go!
With that, he gives a battle cry and surges forward. Fuck that noise. I aim my first arrow and let it fly just as the first creature opens its mouth and lunges at me with a snarl.
Part 4. Rahash. The scene before me is something out of my worst nightmares. Liz's small form stands on the edge of the cliff, her strange weapon clenched in her hands. Metlaks, the wild, unpredictable creatures, surround her. I have seen them tear a hunter limb from limb in a matter of seconds, and I have seen them walk past another as if he did not exist. They are impossible to understand, and savage when provoked. And the cub stands near Liz's leg, which definitely counts as provoking. Run, I command her again, but the stubborn woman doesn't listen. Instead, she raises one of her bone-sliver arrows and aims, waiting. A protective fury comes over me when one of the Metlaks bares its big yellow teeth in my direction. They think to hurt my mate? To take her from me after waiting for so long? I will snap their bonds and crush their filthy pelts under my boot before I let them touch her. A feral snarl escapes my throat, and I pull one of my deadly bone knives free from its casing, my spear in my other hand. Liz takes another step backward, even closer to the edge of the cliff. My heart hammers in my breast, and a wave of pure fear moves over me. Liz, I bark out as one of the Metlax prowls toward her. Run past me. Go now. I will distract them. Quickly. I'm not leaving you, she calls out, not looking away from the Metlax closest to her. Don't be foolish, I growl as it paces ever closer to her. Two more steps and he'll be able to reach her with his long arms. She needs to move fast. Come, Liz. My heart stops as it lunges for her. I cry out and surge forward, my spear flying. It flies through the air and slams into the side of the Metlax reaching for my precious mate. It staggers and then falls forward, still reaching for her. I cry out in anger and storm through the snow, moving to stand in front of her. Another creature bellows and begins to beat on its chest, sending a furious call forth across the snows. The other Metlax respond and one charges forward. I've seen these tactics before. They will rush us to the edge of the cliff and pick off our carcasses later, once they know we are dead. I refuse to fall back. Thunk! One of Liz's bone needles flies past and appears in the eye socket of one of the bigger males. It groans and falls into the snow, twitching. Her shot is beautiful, and I see the potential for the weapon. Watch your arm, she calls to me as she raises another arrow and aims it. When another leaps for us, she shoots again, and again her bone needle hits its mark. The Metlax is dead before it can hit the ground. It is a thing of beauty to see, and fierce pride in my mate surges inside me. Then the remaining Metlax scream and charge forward all at once. My instincts honed from years of hunting, my need to protect fierce within me, I surge forward with a yell of my own. I hear Liz gasp, but it only encourages my ferocity. They will not get near her. They will have to storm over my dead carcass first. I launch into the first one with a fury, my bone blade slicing against its woolly neck with such ferocity that it's nearly severed. I lunge for the next, and instead of fighting me, it ducks away. Another lands on my back, pulling at my hair and clothing. Sharp teeth sink into my shoulder, and I hear Liz scream. I jam my knife into the one in front of me, even as the one on my back slides to the ground. I look down and see another one of Liz's thin bone arrows jutting up from its throat. I've only got the one left, she cries out behind me, even as two more jump onto me, and a third attacks from the front. One on one, they would be no problem, but Metlax are savage, ripping creatures. Already their claws and teeth are sinking into my skin, tearing at me. I growl with pain when one slashes across my face and blood veils my sight. Rahash, she cries from a distance. You're moving too close to the ledge. Hey, get back! Her warning voice changes to one of fear and I snarl and turn toward her. Three are heading for her, pacing in her direction, their large teeth bared. The one on my back bites at my neck furiously and I feel shockwaves go through my arm, even as my blade sinks into the chest of another. Must save my mate. The thought rings in my head over and over again. Must save Liz. She is everything. With a brutal cry, I grab the two Metlax in front of me. My fingers sink into fistfuls of shaggy fur and I pitch toward the cliff. Rahash, look out! She cries. But she does not realize my plan until too late. I hear Liz's scream of anguish as I topple over the side of the cliff, taking five of the brutal creatures with me. I will even the odds this way. Maybe she can escape the two or three left. The memory of Liz's face swims before my mind moments before I hit the ground with a sickening crunch and all goes dark.
Liz. I scream in horror as Rahash's long body goes flying over the edge of the cliff, several of the creatures flying over with him. I rush to the side where he went over and look down. It's at least a 30-foot drop, and Rahash is on his back, crumpled in the snow. One of his legs is at an odd angle, and he lies atop a dead Metlax. The others are strewn around him, not moving, and the snow is spattered with blood. I can't tell if he's alive or dead. I can't be alone out here. I can't. I can't lose him. Hot panic rushes through me. I only have one arrow left, and there's three of the creatures remaining, along with a young one that still frolics and plays in the snow as if this is all a game. I don't know what to do. They continue to advance, and I see wicked claws tipping each finger, and their furby-like faces look more and more ominous as they approach. And they killed Rahash. These fucking dicks. My last arrow trembles in my hand, and then I get an idea. I fling my bow aside and grab the Metlock youngling as it frolics close, and I jam the arrow under its jaw and pin it against my body. A hostage is the only chance I have, but I don't know if the creatures are smart enough to realize what a hostage situation is. They look vaguely human-like, but I could be all wrong. They could just stare at me and then come and rip my throat out anyhow. But they cry out and stop when I grab the young one. It wriggles and squirms in my arms, and its claws sink into my arms, but I hold the arrow against its jaw, grimly determined. I take a step to the side, and they watch me, their eyes wild. They make weird crooning noises in their throats, and the one in my grip responds. This might work. I glance over the edge of the ledge, desperate for a way down. I have to get to Rahash. Have to. In my head, if I can get to him, I can save him. Let him know that I don't really hate him, that I'm just confused and unhappy, but that his smiles make the world not so bad. I pace against the edge, watching the other Metlock things as I creep around the cliff, looking for the way down. I spy something that looks like a footpath and head toward it, my hostage squirming and clawing in my scratch-covered arms. I look at the others to see if they're staying back. They hunch in the snow, watching me with predatory eyes. Rahash, I call out, hoping he'll answer and is fine and my eyes are just mistaking things. But there's nothing but silence. I call his name desperately again as I slide down the steep path. Rahash! Please, answer me! The path gives out a short distance from the bottom, and both I and my captive tumble the last few feet to the ground, only to land in thick snow. The breath is knocked from my lungs, and I pant flat on my back. Next to me, my captive gets up and darts away, heading away from the cliff instead of back toward its parents. It disappears over another snowbank, and I consider going after it, but pick myself up and grab my lone arrow and then rush to Rahash's side. Rahash? I press my hand to his chest. There's blood tinging his mouth and his eyes are closed. There's a small puddle of blood where his head was, and a sob escapes me at the sight of it. I press against the armored skin over his heart and hear it beating, slow and steady. Oh, thank God. For a moment, I want to fling my arms around his big blue neck and cry my brains out. But I look up the cliff, my arrow clutched in hand, waiting to see if the others are coming down after me and the child. But there's nothing. For several minutes, there's nothing, and I sit alert at Rahash's side, waiting. I can keep waiting, or I can help him. I focus on the fallen man at my side. I run my hands over him, trembling, trying to assess the damage. His leg is at an odd angle, and his breathing is shallow, but I can't tell if he's broken ribs or worse. I try not to think about that. His cootie starts up at my touch, and I hope that's a good sign. I'm going to get you out of here, I whisper to his unconscious body. You can count on me. It's going to be all right. I wish she'd wake up and smile at me, or frown, or something. But he's so still. One of the Metlocks twitches and makes a wounded sound. I gasp and turn to it, my hands scrambling to find a weapon. The only thing I have is my last arrow, and my bow is left atop the ridge. But it's not getting up. It makes a pitiful cry and jerks on the ground as if trying to get itself up, but can't. Its hips are at an odd angle, and as I look around, I see another Metlock is moving, just a little. I look at the top of the ridge to see if the others are going to return, but there's no sign of them. I think these wounded ones have been left for dead. My heart gives an uncomfortable little squeeze. Even I wouldn't wish this kind of pain on our attackers. The sounds they're making are horrible, and I glance around and spy Rahash's bone blade a short distance away. I grab it and stand over one of the wounded creatures. There are five of them in total, but only two are moving. I don't know that it was a big enough fall to kill them, and I don't know what I'll do if they wake up and attack again. I'm low on options, so I kneel beside the first one. I'm sorry, I say, and cut its throat. I remind myself that it's a mercy killing, that it's kill or be killed out here, and that it's wounded beyond its ability to get up and limp home. It still doesn't make me feel any better. It was easier to do this when they were attacking and there was no time to think or process. I move to the next creature, It's unmoving, but I cut its throat anyhow just to be sure. By the time I finish the last one, I'm spattered in blood and crying. I move to Rahash's side and touch my fingers to his cheek. Does he feel cool? Oh, God. I don't know what to do. Please don't die on me, Rahash. Please, please. I lean over him and give in to girly tears for a bit longer, sobbing. Then I sit up and wipe my eyes because tears won't make it magically better. I have to get him home to our cave. Okay, think, Liz, I tell myself and glance around sniffling. You have a big honking alien you can't carry and can't walk, and you need to get him home. I look over at Rahash and wonder if my cootie has made me stronger. Can I drag him? Our home cave is up the cliff and a few miles away, but there's got to be a way back up that doesn't involve the shitty footpath I came down. There has to be another way around. I just have to find it. I stand up and examine Rahash, then grab his arm and tentatively tug on it. The fucker is heavy. I pull harder trying to move him. He makes a low groan of pain and I immediately stop. Shit, sorry. I examine his other arm to see if it's any better, and I can see the bone sticking out of a break near his wrist. Fuck. I can't tug on that one. It's just as well, because that test tug only told me that he was super heavy. I need a better way. Desperate, I look around. In the distance are the pink, whippy trees that bend and move with the breeze, and I grab Rahash's bone knife and head for them, an idea in my head. When my dad shot a deer, we'd normally tie the legs to a pole and then shoulder it, but there's no one to hold the other shoulder for me this time. One time, though, I was being a whiny kid and my dad got pissed and made himself a travoy out of two branches and a tarp and dragged the deer home behind him while I blubbered at his side. God bless me being a shitty kid. I can make a travoy and drag Rahash home. It takes me nearly an hour to chop down one of the flimsy trees, but they'll suit my purpose just fine. The trunk is big enough for me to grip comfortably, and even though it's sticky and spongy to the touch, I should be able to carry it just fine. I chop down another, and by the time I drag them back to Rahash, I'm trembling with exhaustion, and I worry I've ruined his bone knife by dulling it. There's no time to worry about that, though, because a fine snow is now falling and the skies are overcast. If I don't get Rahash home, we're going to be in deep shit. So I kneel to the ground and shrug off the warm cloak he gave me this morning and begin to tie it down to the poles to make the base of the travoy. I use some of the ties on my leggings to tie the cloak down, and by the time I'm done, I'm shivering in the cold, my clothing is wrecked and half gone, and the snow is coming down in a thick blanket. Rahash? I call softly, tapping his cheek to see if he's awake. No response. In a way, I'm glad. This will hurt less if he's unconscious. With an apology in my brain, I grab his good arm and drag/roll him toward the travoy. He groans with pain but doesn't rouse. I grab the poles, clench the knife between my teeth, and begin to drag my makeshift travoy after me. Fuck. It's heavy, but I'm out of options. I'll just have to suck it up. We can't stay here. I bite my lip and begin the long, slow drag home. It takes me hours to find the way out of the canyon, but once I do, I'm able to see the remainder of our footprints as dips in the falling snow and the glaciers in the distance. I can make it home. I can. My fingers feel like bricks of ice and I have blisters on my hands, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel. As I give the travoy another tug, Rahash groans. I gasp and set it down gently, then rush to his side. Rahash, are you awake? His head tosses, and then he gazes at me with a pain-glazed stare. I'm not entirely sure he's aware of where he is.
Liz,
he breathes, and tries to reach for me with his hand. His face contorts in agony, and he falls back against the travoy. Don't move, I tell him. I'm getting you out of here. It's going to be fine.
Leave me,
he pants.
I am too wounded.
Bullshit, I tell him, though he's voicing my worst fears. You're fine. You just need to rest and recover for a few days. Let the cootie do its work.
You're not safe.
His eyes slide closed again. I'm fine, I bellow, a little louder than I need to. I lean forward and grab Rahash by the collar. Are you listening to me? I'm fine, and you're going to be fine. Don't you die on me. He doesn't answer, and I panic a little. I shake him, eliciting another wounded groan from him. I don't care. If he's groaning, he's alive. Don't you fucking leave me, Rahash! I release him and smooth his clothing down, then lean in, putting my hand over his chest. His Kui vibrates at my touch, and I decide bribery is the best weapon I have. I place my mouth close to his ear. If you come out of this alive, Rahash, I'll fuck the hell out of you, so help me God.
Rahash. My mind is a blur of red pain and black dreams. Sometimes my Kui resonates in my chest and everything feels better. Sometimes there is a jolt of dark pain and I sink further into the blackness. I need to focus, to concentrate, but my mind won't stay alert. But I have to, I remind myself. I must protect Liz. Liz, I breathe. My mate. I'm here, a soft voice says in the darkness. Tender fingers brush my cheek, and I fight against the tide of pain that threatens to pull me under. My eyelids feel as if someone is sitting on them, they are so heavy. Relax, she says, her breath sweet. I feel her lips kiss my cheek, and then she caresses me again. You're safe. Just heal, okay? I lick my dry lips. Metlak's taken care of. I've got a fire and meat drying, and I've resharpened your knife. Her hands smooth down my chest and arms, and I feel a fiery bolt of pain surge as she does. A hiss of breath escapes my throat. You're healing well. Really fast, actually. I had to set your bonds. I'm sorry, I know it must hurt. Just relax, okay? My Kui thrums in my chest, and I hear hers respond. Even though I am grievously injured and awash in pain, my cock stirs in response. We are taking too long to answer the call of the resonance, and my body reminds me that we must obey soon. Do not leave me. I won't, she says in a soft voice. Just live. Sleep. Her fingers brush over my lips. Sleep, she repeats again. And I do. I'm in and out for what feels like forever. My mind is full of the soft touches of Liz's hands, her soothing words as she pours broth down my throat, and the throbbing ache of my body as my Kui works to heal it. My limbs are not the only things that ache. My cock burns ferociously for my mate, and I worry that I will wake up healed only to fall upon Liz and force her into mating. I do not think a human would like that, not with all their rituals of denial. But my choices are not my own. My body must have time and rest to heal, and so I slip in and out between dreams. At one point I wake up, surprisingly clear-headed. There is an ache in my body like a rotten tooth, lingering but not overly painful. I'm able to open my eyes without it feeling a chore, though, and I look over to the fire. Liz is there, my leather tea pouch boiling over a tripod placed over the fire. She sharpens my knife against a rock, and as I look over, I see strips of dried meat hanging from a net of woven reeds placed against the wall. Her bow, no, a new one, is placed against the far wall, and a companion to it lies unstrung nearby. My mouth feels as if it is leather. I lick my lips and try to sit up, thirsty. I am weak, and my Kui throbs and hums with hunger. Liz looks over at me with surprise. Rahash! She moves over to me and puts a hand on my chest. Don't get up. Seriously, you're still weak. I ignore her fussing and sit upright, testing my body. It aches, but nothing grates out of place in my chest. I lift one hand and flex it. There's hot pain in it, but it is straight, a makeshift splint around it. I had to set the bonds, Liz explains, tucking blankets around my body. Does it feel okay? You did well, I tell her thickly. Her nearness makes me ache with a different kind of hunger. My cock aches and my Kui resonates as she leans in to press her small fingers to my forehead. I grab her hand and kiss the palm, wishing it was wrapped around my cock and stroking it. I remember that from before. The rawness of it is seared into my mind. Are you thirsty? Hungry? She asks, her eyes wide and searching. She pulls her hand from my grip and gets up, moving toward the fire. I made you some broth. You need to keep your strength up. When she brings the small cup of broth to me, the scent of her warm skin is more appealing than the drink. She lifts her arm to hold the cup to my mouth, and I caress her round, lovely breast through her clothing. Liz trembles, and my Kui resonates in time with hers. I see you're feeling better, she says in a shaky voice, and pushes my hand away. No hanky-panky right now. Hanky-panky, I ask. I do not know what this word is. Nor do I particularly care. Liz's hair is braided back from her face, displaying her beautiful neck, and I want to bury my face there. I want her small body against mine, to feel her heart beating, to scent her arousal and touch her and claim her. That's right, she says, and her voice is breathless. I hear her qui resonating in her chest. It's not the time right now. You're not really well yet. My fingers brush her cheek, touch her jaw, her throat. I touch her everywhere I can before she moves away, even as she puts the cup to my lips and forces me to drink. When she pulls it back, I lean my head against the cave wall, my eyes closed. I'm tired, but touching her is making me feel better. She puts the cup aside and peels the blankets off my legs. I hear a muffled snort. Well, it seems part of you is working just fine, she says. I open my eyes and glance down. My cock is at attention, thrusting up from my body. It aches, and for a hopeful moment I think she will take it in her soft human mouth again and tongue it. It is not to be, though. Liz is all business and checks my bandages, clucking at my wounds. You're on the mend, but still not better. My qui does not care, I tell her. She's bent over, and her face is close to my cock, even as she fusses over my bandages. It wants me to claim you. She makes a humming sound in her throat, but I can't tell if it's agreement or not. Tell your queen now is not the time. I watch her as she gets up and moves about the cave. Her body is graceful and lean under the shapeless leathers, and her eyes are bright. She smells like the richest honey, and my senses are starved for her. I shift in my palate. I recall a promise you made. Her face flushes and she moves toward the fire, tucking one of her braids behind an ear. When you're better, I intend to keep my promise. But for now, you need to sleep. She rubs one of her eyes and I realize that she's got dark rings on her pale skin. She looks hollow and tired herself. Her clothing is dirty and ragged, and her hair has not been washed in many days. She's thin, too, like when she was sick before. How long have you been caring for me? I ask, humbled. While I have been lying here sleeping, letting my qui heal itself slowly, she has been hard at work. She moves to the wall of the cave and touches it, and I see hash marks chalked onto the stone. 9 days, she counts, then picks up a chalky stone and adds another mark. 10, really. No wonder my body is reacting to her nearness. I've never heard of a couple avoiding a resonance mating for this long. I also wonder if this has to do with how long it is taking my body to heal. With the healer Malak's help, a break can be healed in a matter of days. If I have been mostly unconscious for 9, I worry that my qui is overtaxed and unsatisfied. Soon it will stop asking and start demanding. I wonder if Liz realizes this. Now that I am conscious again, my qui has decided it must claim Liz and must claim her now. It does not matter that my body is yet healing or that Liz is exhausted. All that matters is the mating the qui demands. Liz resonates every time she gets near me, and sometimes when she returns to the cave, she smells of sex on her hands, as if she has pleasured herself. I know she is not unaffected by the need between us. She must be hiding her desires, thinking my body more fragile than it truly is. The only thing that is fragile is my control. Every night she curls up against me, exhausted from a day of hunting and tending the fire, and then tending to me. She tenderly bathes me and feeds me chunks of dried meat from kills she has made. All the while she is busy making weapons or melting more water or emptying out my piss pot, and since she insists I need to stay off my leg. It is becoming impossible to resist her. When she moves past me, I reach for her automatically. When her body fits itself against mine in bed, it takes every ounce of strength I have not to push her to the ground and fuck her. And when she comes back with her hands smelling like her sweet cunt, I must close my eyes and remind myself that control will win my human, not brute strength. But control only goes so far, and I worry it will flow through my hands like water.
Liz. It's a lot of work to rough it and take care of Rahash. The day seems like a never-ending list of chores. Clean cave, bathe Rahash, shake out blankets, melt water for drinking, eat, check traps, smoke extra meat, melt more water, fix weapons, tend to Rahash, melt even more water, and so on and so on. Rahash is a terrible patient, too. He's healing faster than anything I've ever seen, and I suspect that's the cootie's work. Too bad it's not helping his mood any. He's grabby, despite his injuries, and cranky when I push his hands away. He's healing, which means fooling around is a terrible idea, no matter how good it sounds to me. Truth is, I'm indescribably horny. I've never felt this way in my life. Like I need to jump Rahash's bones or I'll die. But Rahash's bones are newly mending, and I just can't. He needs to save his strength. And truth is, I'm tired, and I don't feel very pretty. I'm grimy and sweaty from all the work I've been doing around camp, and my leather clothing is stained with Rahash's blood, mine, and the Metlaks I killed, along with the game I've been hunting. But this afternoon, it's snowing fiercely, and there's plenty of fuel for the fire. There's dried meat for dinner, and Rahash is napping in the blankets, his long legs sprawled in the furs. He watches me sometimes, and then pretends to sleep. Right now, though, I think he's truly asleep. I scratch at my itchy scalp, and my tightly braided hair feels dirty. I look at the fire and wonder if I can have myself a quick hot sponge bath while he's resting. As soon as the idea enters my mind, I'm all for it. I fill the cooking skin with snow, and when it melts, add more handfuls of snow until there's a good amount heating over the fire. I find the soapy berries that Rahash explained to me were for cleaning and not eating, and smash a few of them between my fingers and add them to the water. While it heats up, I strip my leathers off and stretch near the fire. I stay clothed around Rahash, mostly because I don't want to tempt him. It's not that I don't want to have sex with him anymore. Nearly losing him made me realize that, okay, yes, I do want to have hot, nasty sex with the man, alien. I was only torturing myself by denying it. I'm not sure I'm ready to deal with the mates and babies aspect, but one thing at a time, and right now I'm fixated on sex. Sex, sex, sex. Masturbating quietly outside the cave hasn't been scratching the itch, and I can hardly wait for the man to start walking around so I can jump his ass. Metaphorically speaking, of course. But while we're in physical denial, a nice quick sponge bath sounds awesome. I take a tiny bit of rabbitish fur and dip it in the warm water and then begin to bathe myself. Grime streaks off my arms as I do and I bite back a moan of pleasure. My sponge bath feels amazing already. Quickly, I wash my body, running the fur over my skin, across the back of my neck and under my arms. My breasts are sensitive and I whimper when the wet fur glides over them. I'm half dreading, half anticipating how it'll feel to wash my girl parts. When I get to that section, though, I screw my face up and give it a quick, vigorous wash, trying not to touch myself more than I need to. No sense in getting worked up only to have zero release. I dunk the bit of fur and then start to wring the water out into my braids, wetting them in the hopes of cleaning my hair a bit. When it feels a little cleaner, I squeeze my braids to remove the excess water, and then all that's left are my legs. I bend over to swipe at my calves. Warm hands grip my ass, startling me. Rahash? I glance over my shoulder to see him press his mouth against my hip, the look on his face one of sheer and utter bliss. He's naked. He's been naked and in bed for days. And he's completely aroused. And my pulse goes wild, as does my cootie. "You shouldn't be up," I tell him, sounding as breathless as I feel. He presses kisses on my damp hip, and his hand slides up the inside of my thigh.
"I can smell your arousal, mate. Can smell it on your hands when you return to the cave. Do you think I do not notice?"
A hot blush steals over my cheeks. "I was, keeping things under control."
"I have no control where you are concerned,"
he murmurs, nipping at my skin with those long, inhuman fangs. I have no idea why the sight of them gets me so hot, but it does. Damn, does it ever. "You're not feeling well."
"My greatest ache has nothing to do with bones,"
he says, and his fingers brush over the folds of my sex, insistent. A whimper escapes me.
"Bend over."
His breath tickles my leg.
"I would taste, my mate."
I clutch the bit of wet fur I've been using as a washcloth and then toss it aside. My entire body is flushed with heat, and while part of my brain is screaming that I shouldn't give in to what the alien wants, my cootie's humming a delicious song in time with his, and I'm so full of need that I could crawl out of my own skin. So I slowly reach down and put my hands on the backs of my calves, like I'm in gym class and stretching. Except I'm naked. So naked. And turned on. I feel Rahash spread my cheeks, and then his mouth is on my sex, tonguing with a ravenous ferocity that makes my knees weak. I cry out and immediately stumble forward, too close to the fire. Only his strong arm around my thighs keeps me from tumbling in. Instead, he swings me around until I'm facing the blankets, and then he pushes me forward, his arm still locked around my thighs. It forces me into the furs, my cheek moving to the floor and my ass is in the air. And still, he devours me with single-minded intensity. My toes curl and cries escape my throat as his tongue, bumpy and thick, spears me deep inside my core. Oh, fuck. This is too much for me to handle. It feels too good. He groans and pauses, and I catch my breath.
So sweet.
That's the only warning I get before he dives in again, and my legs tense with the aching need of it all. Oh, God. I am this close to coming already, and all he's done is slam his face into my pussy and start licking. Of course, the visual of that makes me crazy, and I squirm against his mouth, bucking backward and trying to ride his face.
Mine.
He growls into my flesh, and then thrusts his tongue into me again. I scream and fist my hands in the furs as I come, my legs tight with the orgasm ripping through me. I feel my body spasm with the force of my orgasm, and wetness floods between my legs. It makes Rahash lose his mind. He snarls and then grabs my hips again. Before I can breathe, he has me flip to my back, and my legs are in the air.
He takes his cock in his hand, and then he thrusts into me.
And I scream again. It feels as if I've been hollowed out from the inside, he's so big. It feels downright amazing. I've had sex before, but I've never felt every inch of a man as he was inside me. Normally, it just feels vaguely full. This feels like intensity. I can feel every ridge of his cock, every rough bump, every vein. And I, for damn sure, feel the spur above his cock. The moment he thrust inside me, it slid between my pussy lips and brushed against my clit, gliding like another finger. I'm overwhelmed with sensation. He freezes over me, his glowing eyes narrowing as he gazes down at me. He's utterly still, not even breathing. I can't read his expression.
Liz,
he asks.
Did I? Are you hurt?
His hand drags over his mouth, and I realize the carefully veiled expression on his face is hiding worry. I'm good, I tell him, and lift my hips. Please don't stop. He growls low in his throat, and the feral look returns to his face. He leans forward and plants a hand on my hips, and then he slams deep into me again. And I cry out once more because, God, how can I not? It feels like he's fucking me inside out. It's the most amazing thing I've ever felt. His hair is hanging close to my face, and I grab it by the fistful, holding onto him as roughly as he's holding onto me. Don't fucking stop. I snarl back at him. Don't ever stop. His nostrils flare, and then Rahash hammers into me harder than ever. I'm screaming as I come, yanking on his hair and raising my hips to meet his eager thrusts. It's like my orgasm that I had a few moments ago never went away. It just keeps rolling through me, and I scream and scream as it goes on and on. With every thrust, Rahash's spur drags against my clit, and I feel as if I'm coming apart at the seams. I can't handle this much pleasure. I can't. Rahash's body jerks, and for a moment I think he's going to complain about his knee or a muscle cramp. The look on his face is so utterly surprised. But then his breath hisses from his tight lips, his body jerks, and I realize he's come too.
Rahash. I am utterly reborn. Every muscle in my body, every tendon, every organ... It no longer belongs to Rahash. It is all Liz's to dispose of. I am completely and utterly hers. I collapse on top of my mate, spent from our furious coupling. It hasn't been very long at all, and my cock is still twitching despite the fact that it's buried deep inside her, and I've come. But the resonance isn't going away. If anything, it's growing stronger with each passing moment, our quees united in a song. Liz's hands slide from my hair and she grimaces at the sight of the long strands on her fingers. I might have pulled out a handful or two. I'm sorry. She offers it back to me. I take the strands of hair and toss them aside. I have more. She can pull it all out if she likes. I cannot. I just want to remain buried inside her. I roll on my side and tuck her against my body, pressing her face to my chest. I have never felt so much. She is mine. All mine. Even now, she is full of my seed. I can feel her cunt gripping me tight, hot spasms working through her body. She gives a little gasp with each one, and I suspect they are pleasurable for her. I stroke a hand over her pale braids, wet from her bath. My mate, I murmur. My Liz. My human makes a little sound that is half moan, half sigh, all pleasure. She nuzzles against my chest and her hand strokes down my arm. I do the same to her, enjoying the difference in textures of our bodies. She does not have the soft fuzz that covers my people. Human skin is different, but I enjoy it. It feels decadent to the touch, and it reminds me of licking inside her smooth cunt. It is a good memory, and it's something I want to do again, immediately. My fingers move to the base of my cock, still seated deep inside her, and I run my fingers along the edges of her opening where she is gripping me tight deep inside her. Her folds are stretched taut. She sucks in a breath. What? I like the feel of you when I'm inside you, I tell her, and her face colors even brighter red under her warm flush. You are stretched wide to accommodate me. Braggart, she says, in a teasing voice, and her hand trails down my chest thoughtfully. We probably did that all wrong, by the way. We did? I'm shocked that I've somehow displeased her. Is there a human ritual that I have missed? She chuckles and her finger trails over one of my pectorals, then flicks my nipple. Not exactly, unless you call foreplay a ritual. She shifts and I feel every muscle in her body against my cock. I inhale sharply because I'm ready to claim my mate again, but she's talking, so I try to pay attention. Most of the time, she continues, women want to be wooed into sex. Wooed into sex? I do not understand. She was screaming for me. I can still taste the wet arousal of her on my tongue. I study her for a moment, considering. Ah, maybe this is the time for the courting word. Nope, I tell her. Her hand slams on my chest. What do you mean, nope? She looks affronted. I could want some fucking foreplay. I don't think that's too much to ask. Wait, is this not a courting word? She makes an outraged noise. I asked you for foreplay and you said no? I said nope, I got correct. This is not right. You said it to me and it was clear you liked my touch. Liv gives me an incredulous look and pushes at my chest. I have no idea what you are talking about, weirdo. Let me go. Never, I state and fist my hand in her hair like she did to me. She stills in my grip and I study her, the pulse racing in her beautiful throat, the hot anger and lust flaring in her eyes. Explain to me this foreplay. You're fucking kidding, right? I roll the words around in my head, but the translations do not sound right. My cock does not claim you as a jest, no. Oh, Jesus, that's not what I meant. She blows a breath out, frustrated. Okay, foreplay. That's like titty squeezes and stuff. You gotta work a girl up for sex. Make sure she's good and wet and into it. I frown down at her. You were wet. I know, but I licked your wetness off of the insides of your thighs. Your cunt was so wet it was dripping. Her fingers press my lips together and she looks embarrassed. Don't say such dirty things. Dirty? It was beautiful to see all that wetness that I caused. I would drink of her sweet nectar for hours, but she seems uncomfortable with the thought. Humans are strange. Then tell me, I insist. What is a titty squeeze? I do not know these words. Oh, Lord, she breathes. What on earth did that translator teach you? She pats the top of her chest. You know, boobs, breasts. They feel good when you touch them. I immediately place a hand over one and give it a caress, then look at her face. Liz giggles. Not right now. Before sex, to warm me up, so I'm ready to go. I am ready to go, I point out to her. My cock is hard and still inside her, and I want to start thrusting again, but I am waiting for her very human signal that this is okay to her, that this is foreplay. So I give her breast another tentative squeeze. Like so? Her brows draw together. You mean, you want to have sex again? Is that what this means? I squeeze her breast again. No, that's you honking my tit. That is what you said you wanted.